Hi, I'm Kathleen Gallagher.
Kathleen is the director of the Milwaukee Institute, and I'm Tim Keane.
Tim is the director of Golden Angel Investors, and this is How Did You Do That? When he heard the knock on the door, 7-year-old Jerry Smith went to answer it. There was a state trooper standing there with devastating news. Dad's truck had been hit by a train. Dad was paralyzed, and although he never gave up hope for a recovery, he would be a quadriplegic for the next 36 years. The tragedy impacted the family and shaped Jerry, underlining for him the value of relationships and the importance of work.
Jerry went on to a successful 45-year career in commercial banking. He is founding CEO of First Business Bank and its parent company and is now chairman of First Business Financial Services, a publicly traded company with a $200 million market cap and $1.8 billion in assets. Jerry, welcome to How Did You Do That?
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate the chance to be here. I'm very much looking forward to having our conversation.
And in the interest of full disclosure, I should mention that I am on the board of the company Jerry founded.
Jerry, I want to start with how your dad's accident shaped who you became. What were the pressures on your family after he was paralyzed?
I grew up in Freedom, which is a small town up in northeastern Wisconsin, population a few hundred, so everyone knew everyone. And in those kind of circumstances, people all joined together and helped each other. So there was just a way of life on a day-to-day basis. There were constantly people coming and going and helping me or shuttling me here or there or wherever. But because of my father had a coal business before he had his sand and gravel business, the sand and gravel business was really just on the cusp of really growing. He had a couple of quarries that he was operating, and I'm sure I would have been in that business today had things been differently. But even at a very early age, I saw how hard he was working to try to make a living for our family. So when I could start to do something, I tried to create in a small town, which is a bit of a challenge, kind of jobs. For one thing, I collected coffee cans free, went around knocking on doors, and then I would sell these coffee cans to somebody that shipped animals and needed to put feed and water in the boxes. And I got a nickel a coffee can, which a nickel was a lot in the early 1950s. And so, that's just an example. I started a printing press in my basement. I was going to start a newspaper and went around and sold advertising to the grocery store and the locker plant. But I didn't realize how tedious and intricate setting type was. And so I ended up the newspaper actually never hit the rack anywhere. I can't really remember if I gave the advertisers their money back. I hope I did, but I'm not sure. I think I had jobs, multiple jobs then, mostly when I was in grade school and high school, all with farms. I got up, milked cows for cattle dealers before school and that sort of thing.
So you wound up really in your first professional job at First National Bank of Appleton. How did that happen?
After high school, I, of course, went to work for a construction company, Sand and Gravel Company. For the summer, I had worked there a couple of summers. And they were building Highway 41 north of Appleton. And that's considered a state project. But the owner of the company wasn't paying state wages to the employees. And so me, an 18-year-old kid just out of high school, lo and behold, the older guys decided that we should go on strike. And so we went on strike. Unfortunately, we didn't have any union. And so the remedy for the owner was quite easy. He fired us. And so there I was, 18 years old, out of high school, no job. And so I came down to Milwaukee for a while. My mother thought I should learn computer programming. That was going to be the big thing of the future. I didn't like it at all. I was very bored. It was not people-oriented enough. So I was sort of floundering around, living with some friends at Marquette, and took some classes there, and finally ended up just dropping out. And my mother saw an ad from Thorpe Finance in the newspaper. I didn't know anything about Thorpe Finance. I didn't even know anything about finance. And I went and interviewed with them, and for reasons unbeknownst to me, they hired me. And I went out and bought a shirt and tie, and they moved me up to Clintonville and put me in a training program. And I started moving up pretty fast with them. Then I went to Shawano. I ended up down in Appleton. I turned 21. They said they would give me an office to manage. I went to Oshkosh. Then I was in a bad motorcycle accident and ended up back in a hospital in Appleton. And the guy who had been my boss went to work at the First National Bank of Appleton in what was at that time called the Installment Loan Department. And he recruited me to go over. Banks didn't know a lot about that kind of business at the time. The finance companies did. And so he recruited me to go over and work in the Installment Loan Department. I quickly saw that the more interesting jobs and better compensation as well were in the commercial lending department, which today is known as business banking.
You at one point were in a bank robbery, right?
I was actually relieving a branch manager who was on vacation. I was a loan officer at the main bank in Appleton, and I went out to Greenville, which is just west of Appleton. I was babysitting, more or less, the branch, if you will, because I really didn't know that much about it. The guy came in three or four times, just looking around and asking a few questions. I started to get a little bit suspicious, enough that at least I looked out in the parking lot at his car. And he left for quite a while. He came back. Apparently, he left all the time because there were other people in the bank. He came in around the lunch hour. He came in my office. Robbery was the last thing in my, I never dreamt that people didn't do that kind of stuff at that period of time. So we were talking about, and he asked me something about wanting to cash a check from Marine Bank, Milwaukee. Next thing I know, he's reaching down to his briefcase. He pulls up a .357 Magnum with a 6-inch barrel, clicks the safety off, points it at me across the desk, says he wants all the money, marched me out to the lobby. I'm praying, figuring this is over. I know this guy. I've already spent better part of a half hour with him. I don't think there's any chance he's going to let me out of this. And they caught him a couple days later anyway in North Dakota.
Eventually, Jerry started his own consulting company, giving banks strategic planning advice. But one day a call came in asking him if he'd be willing to run a small bank in Kingston, Wisconsin. The bank was called Kingston Dalton State Bank, and initially Jerry wasn't interested, but he sent a business associate in his place.
He got up there, and the more we looked at this little bank, and it was a very small bank, $10 million, and we decided, you know, this is a nice little bank. Maybe we should buy it. We, of course, didn't have any money. So we went to some friends, and we got another partner involved in it, and we had a bank. And it was a nice little bank, and we thought we would just take that bank and pay off the debt over time, and maybe it would generate some cash for us.
While Jerry and his partners were running the bank, he visited a business bank in Kansas City and was intrigued by the possibility of bringing that model to Wisconsin.
I could see the opportunity, and it fit with my personal life, too, because I was on the road all the time. I had a young son still in middle school, and I was just gone all the time, and I needed to be home more. And I decided, well, you know, this is a shot for me to do something myself, maybe build something for the future, and get off the road, too. So I started researching business banks. Wrote a business plan. I got a group of people together to help me with it. One individual particularly, a gentleman by the name of John Kloss, who was a professor at the University of Wisconsin. He was a specialist in product development and new product design. He had something he called the pro-con analysis. And he was my professor to go through my business plan with me. He was merciless. His word was differentiation, and everything had to be differentiated, and I mean everything. And so he just kept handing it back to me. He was like your student worst nightmare, and he didn't circle it in red, but he handed it back to me many, many, many times. Ultimately, we got to the point where we tried to have everything about us differentiate from our competition. And I still believe that that was probably the most significant part of it.
Jerry, differentiation became your mantra. Can you tell us some of the ways you differentiated from other banks?
some of these things might not necessarily sound modernized, but at that point in time, our product design was different. Our look was different. Our lobby was different. We didn't have any teller lines. We had desks that people could come to. We didn't have any offices in the traditional sense or conference rooms. We had conference rooms that were only meant that we would go meet with the client. We would never have bring anybody into our office. We didn't want to have a barrier of a desk. So we would sit at chairs in an office. And more times than not, we encouraged the client to have us go to them. So we went to them to underwrite the business, to explain who we were. We went to them to pick up their deposits. We closed the loans at the place of business. It also kept our occupancy costs down, our number of employees down, and the clients loved it. When we opened, when we hired the first marketing person, I told them that my view was if we run an ad and anybody else, any other bank, can put their name on the bottom of the ad, then it's a bad ad.
Over time, entrepreneurs started seeking out Jerry's Bank and became a significant part of his customer base, choosing it over large national banks.
The difference is we are entrepreneurial. I think we have, our board is as well, and we have a really deep appreciation for what our clients or prospects are trying to do and accomplish. And we have a lot of, I end up getting called in on a lot of things where they'll call me up and have me go to Milwaukee or go to Appleton or go to Kansas City and meet with the owners or the prospects and explain to them my experiences. I think those closely held businesses understand that we understand what they're going through because we've lived it ourselves as well. As I said, I think there's a place for both. We are just naturally more attracted to small businesses, and small businesses are attracted to us. I think a lot of the larger, more national companies, you know, we're smaller. You know, we're a little over a billion in the bank, and we have another billion in our investment company. But that's a very small market share in the realm of commercial banking.
So, Jerry, give us three or four tips about starting businesses and growing businesses that you think would be relevant to most entrepreneurs.
Well, Tim, I think having a good business plan is essential. I'm really old school. I really believe having a written business plan, even if it's an outline, but the more detailed, the better as far as I'm concerned, that you can give to somebody and they can read and they can critique it as John Kless did for me so many years ago. I think it's just enormously valuable, especially if you're going to, as you're bringing other people into the business so that they can understand it. Secondly, I think it's critical to have advisors, to surround yourself with some people. They may or may not initially be considered board members, but just people who you really trust their judgment. They've done things themselves, and they're not bashful about telling you what you need to hear, whether you want to hear it or not. That's just incredibly important. I think another is you have to be willing to be adaptable. You have to trust your instincts. You can lock yourself into a game plan and your business plan, and some facets of it aren't working, and you have to be willing to make change and abandon some of the things that you hung your hat on that maybe weren't such great ideas or you could do different variations of it. I think you have to admit that when you screw up, that this idea was not a good idea. As Kathleen knows, I don't like the word pivot. I'm tired of hearing it. So, but you have to be willing to make changes. And I would also say that really value your relationships that you get involved with and how important they are to the business in the long haul. And probably don't let your fears conquer you. When you're laying awake at 3 o'clock in the morning and your kids are in school and the Catholic school and you're paying tuition and you don't have any income coming in and you're wondering how you're going to do this and what did you do and why did you do this, don't give in to it, which I think really brings me to the perhaps the most essential of all, and that's don't quit. When my father, 36 years later, after being in that wheelchair, he died. He had a psalm in his prayer book that he read every day, and I never knew it, and it's called Don't Quit. It was worn very thin, And it was really very much a mantra for me, both then and the rest of my life, I would say, because clearly you do get to the point where it's easier. One time when after I had started my first business, I got a chance to become the president of a bank in Menasha, and I went up there with my wife the night before, and I looked in the windows and I said to my wife, I can't do this. I got to make this business work. And so we went back to Madison and started over. And, you know, today is what it is. I think that's probably the most important.
Well, Jerry, thank you. This has been great.
Really great talking to you, Jerry. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
You can read more about Jerry Smith's story and suggest ideas for future episodes of How Did You Do That at WUWM.com.
And be sure and listen to our other podcasts at the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts.